How's it going? This is Mike from Go Cell Phone Repair. If you haven't been here before, welcome. This is our weekly live stream where we talk about phones, phone repair, tech-related stuff, and so on. On the list of topics, I have a few things that I think that you may be interested in. If you, hey, Beha, what's going on? If you haven't already heard about them, there's some interesting scams going around, and I wanted to talk about one of them just because it happened to be in my email box recently, and then I read an article about it, and I kind of, you know, I usually just blow these things off because you see them so often, but apparently there are still people who fall for this kind of stuff. You know, everything from Nigerian princes who have inheritance that they're trying to help you funnel through your bank account, to recovering passwords, to the FBI asking you for $300 or $500 because they saw something that you had on your phone or your web browser, and they're going to tell all your contacts about it unless you pay them some ransom money. So that one's still floating around. There's actually a new variation on that where they say that they built, hey Jeff, what's up? They built a, or someone built a virus that they were very proud of and that they want to exploit you for money. And if you don't do what they tell you, they're going to send all your browsing history to your friends and relatives, you know, whatever. Obviously, a lot of the sites that will cause you to come across this kind of stuff are questionable. They're rare sites. They may be pornography sites or something along those lines. But sometimes these things just go into your mailbox no matter what. And the funny thing is that what really caught my attention the first time is that I had never purchased anything from Apple before, and yet I get an email saying that Apple needs to verify my account information. So, you know, that one was pretty obvious. But more recently, check this out. Here's what happened. I got this email right here, and if you take a look at it, you know, the first thing that you might notice is that up in the top right-hand corner, it says no reply, dash, and then some weird, you know, just basically random keystrokes that someone put in. Now, to a lot of us, that would be a big red flag that this is not legitimate. But as you can imagine, there are a lot of people who aren't really familiar with email scams. They may not have used the App Store before. You know, they might not use PayPal too much. They could be very young or very old, and, you know, this is all very new to them. So they come across this stuff, and what this says is that I made a purchase for $16 for some game called Mobile Legends, Bang Bang 1000 Diamonds. So obviously, you know, the first thing that came to mind for me was I did not purchase this app or, you know, anything for this app, right? You know, but beyond that, if you thought, whoa, wow, hey, somebody just charged my bank account or my credit card for this amount of money, I need to do something about it immediately. Well, as you can imagine, when you click on one of the links in this email, you'll end up getting to something like this, hopefully, if your browser has some sort of safeguard built into it to let you know that you're entering an unsecure site. This says deceptive site ahead. There's probably some questions as to where it actually goes and so forth. So, you know, a lot of us will just click off of that and say, okay, that's a relief. This is a scam. They didn't take any money out. But, you know, sometimes they do look pretty legitimate. Now, just to give you a comparison here, let's go back to that real quick. Now, this was a fake phishing scam someone sent to my email address and said, you know, you paid this money. Now, take a look at the real one here. Now, this is an actual purchase that I did make from the App Store, and up again, you know, again, if you look at the top left-hand corner, you can see it has no reply at Apple, email.apple.com, which, you know, makes it sound a little bit safer, but obviously, if you didn't recognize the purchase, you still would question it. And by the way, this is for something called Manything Cloud Security Camera App. I am not affiliated with them. I don't give endorsements to people for no reason, but I actually use this application. It's pretty cool. What it does is it allows you to convert, whoops, let's not hit that one. So it allows you to convert any old iDevices that you have laying around into security cameras. So if you have an old iPod Touch fourth generation, or you have a old Kindle, or, you know, anything, it doesn't even have to be an iDevice. Now that I think of it, I've got it on my Android. So this app will work across both platforms, and you can basically turn your old phone into a remote monitoring device that will record and instantaneously upload video and or audio from wherever you put them. So you can basically make your own security system out of old phones. Now, obviously, you need an internet connection for that to work. So if your Wi-Fi goes down, then it doesn't record anything. But what's kind of cool about it is that you can put it into a mode where if someone comes across the device, there's no way for them to go in and alter those records. So once they're uploaded to the server, they are there permanently. It will send you a notification through the app. It comes to your phone, says, hey, it detected motion or detected sound wherever you had the camera set up, and that can, alert you of, whether you want to use it for like a baby monitor, keep track of your pets, make sure nobody's coming through your front door or back door, that kind of thing. It's actually pretty cool, and it's like $4 a month. Anyways, so I know I'm off track a little bit there, but I do think that that is a great piece of software. So obviously you can see some differences here. This is the real thing. This is the scam. You know, what gives it away are two things. One is going to be the email address that they use. The second thing, of course, is that when you click on it, it ends up taking you somewhere where they say, you may not want to be here. Now, beyond that, beyond the real purchase, I got another email here, and that's not the one I'm looking for. Where are we here? So I got another email, if I can find it. I thought I had this thing set up right. So I got this in my email address. It says, please review your Apple account. Messenger@webex.com, whatever it is, sent me this, and it says that I need to update my payment information. So if I was someone who was regularly using iTunes or, any other app store for that matter, to make purchases, the moment I get this decline notification, the first thing that probably goes through my mind is, oh no, they're going to shut off, whatever application it is that I happen to be using. And in this case, it could happen to be that security camera app. And I might think, oh, I need to go in and make this payment and, update my information so that I don't get disconnected. And of course, when you click on this one, let's see, what do we get? Do I actually have, I think I have it there. So this is what I got from this one. When I clicked on it, obviously they used a link shortener and they have since had that taken down. And this often happens to me because anytime I have, I'm doing business with making purchases, I give them an email address that I don't really check that often, because as you can imagine, a lot of this stuff just gets sold to other people so that they can recycle your email address, and there's big businesses in that. Obviously, this is the information age. Guys, hopefully you can hear me okay. My audio, I believe, is working on this, and I just want to make sure I kind of reposition the mic, so I'm sure that you would have spoken up if that wasn't the case. Anyways, yeah, so these things go around, and what they do, I wasn't able to get a shot of that website, unfortunately, but when you click on that one, it goes to something that looks very much like your iTunes account, and they ask you to log in order to confirm your account information. Well, as you can imagine, what they do is they capture whatever information you input. So if you put in your email address or your username and your password, it instantly gets captured. They probably give you an error message and say, we're updating your account, or we'll get back to you, or who knows what. And in the meantime, they go log into your account. Thank you, Jeff. They go and log into your account and they start making unauthorized purchases. And I'd imagine at that level, you can probably get that money refunded, but it's a big hassle for you. You know, just like anything else that is identity theft, which, when we really start thinking about things like facial recognition software, I am very curious as to the future of these types of scams that are happening right now. At this level, they're trying to get your login and your password. Eventually, people, if they're not already, they're trying to get your your fingerprint so they can use their touch ID. Next, it's going to be facial recognition, retina scan. Pretty soon, biometrics are, hopefully going to be secure enough that people can't bypass them easily. But typically what happens is, where there's a will, there's a way. So all this stuff is really a deterrent. If somebody wants to get your stuff, they're determined to do so. Unless you catch them in the act, it's going to be kind of a whack-a-mole game. Like, people come up with an idea to rip people off, and then somebody figures out a solution, and then, goes back and forth. And oftentimes what we find is that a lot of the people who are figuring out the security measures and countermeasures, they're kind of working both sides of the fence, so they have information as to how to build out this technology, and they use that to figure out a way to bypass it, and then they go to the person whose account has been compromised, or whose, company information has been compromised, and says, hey, we have a new safeguard for you, so you kind of go back and forth on that. It's really crazy the way that it works. But in any case, watch out for that stuff. Obviously, most of us will know that this is all fake, but there are apparently enough people out there still doing it that is generating a profit. And I came across something recently that really made me question, rethink the way that I approach this kind of stuff. And that was always this. Usually when you get these emails, you just say, this is obviously fake. These guys are full of it. They're trying to get my stuff. They're often spelling and grammatical errors in the email that you get. Well, one of the explanations that I heard is that they purposely make these emails look very sloppy. They purposely misspell words. they purposely make the phrasing sound odd because apparently that's part of their screening process to make sure that they get through to people who can't recognize the difference between something that's legitimate and something that's not. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they are targeting people who aren't intelligent. They can easily be targeting people who may have some literacy issues. They may be English second language. They may have problems communicating. So there are some potential victims out there. You know, typically they target the elderly when it comes to these type of scams, because when someone sees a thing that says, you know, your computer is compromised, you need to dial this number or else it's, you know, you're going to lose all your files. If computers are new to you, you know, you're not that familiar with them, there's a good possibility that you might fall for that kind of thing. So if you have people in your life who are potentially going to be victims of this, it's a good idea to pass this information on to them. You know, call me first if you get this message, and let's make sure it's legitimate before you give out any passwords or any credit card information, obviously. Now, this next one, I hope that you will all enjoy, and I want to invite everyone at the same time. So what happened is there is a shop in Berkeley, which is pretty close to where I'm at. It's probably about 20, 30 minutes from where I live. And they caught a guy on their security camera basically walking out of their phone repair store without paying for his repair. So I know that I've already set it up, so you know what to expect. I do want to show the video. The way that this software works, it's a little tricky for me to actually pause things without compromising the video quality. So I want you to see it. In fact, you know what? I might actually have it in the browser now that I think of it. Take it back. So let me bring this back up. Yeah, I actually do. So the video quality won't be perfect. I will put the address, the URL for this video if you want to see it a little bit cleaner. It doesn't look terrible on here, but you can probably get a much better image of the guy who's in the shot here. But this way we can actually go through here and just kind of pause this thing as it's playing. Let me get him on the screen real quick here. I'll get my playback controls. I have almost got this thing dialed into where I don't have to make all these funny pauses and figure out what I'm doing, but still working on it. Okay, so what we have is a cell phone repair shop. You can see they've kind of got their office here where people can come in. And let me make sure this is tracking properly. Let's see, it says it is playing. I think it takes a minute for the guy to actually walk in, so bear with me for a second. He should show up here shortly. And what just happened here? Let's try that again. Okay, I must have played it all the way to through to the end. Sorry, I'm an amateur, but I will get this thing working. Here we go. So, dude's walking in from outside to pick up his phone that's been repaired. Comes in through the door. They have a little office area here for customers, I assume, for when they want to pick up their devices and make payments and so forth. This is from iResurrect Repairs, by the way. Again, in Berkeley. It says Berkeley Telegraph. And here the employee's coming out with, you can see they have a few things. You know, he's got a laptop. Looks like he's got a MacBook sitting there on the desk. He's got a phone sitting over there to the right. So there's already some stuff here, including the customer's phone, which is actually behind the desk there a little bit. But presumably they go in the back, you know, and kind of meet up to finish the transaction. And, you know, typically we'll see customers kind of look over the phone, make sure that they're happy with the quality of the repair and so forth. And I'm not sure if he's just kind of stalling right now or thinking this through, you know, deciding what he wants to do. But he's probably checking some messages here, you know, obviously. And this isn't too out of the ordinary. When people pick up their phones, the first thing they do is go to check their text messages, their missed calls, you know, social media, that kind of stuff. We see this all the time. Doesn't look out of the ordinary whatsoever. Puts the phone in his pocket. Here comes the invoice. And he just takes the door instead. So, you know, I think there were some notes about this guy being on a skateboard or something like that. But just basically bails. I keep hitting the countdown. Sorry about that. Just bails after the repair without paying. So, you know, obviously it was his phone, but he didn't pay for the service rendered. Now, they talked to the guy who was the victim, basically, of this. And apparently the guy provided a fake name, you know, didn't have an ID when he showed up. And we don't really make it a practice of IDing customers every time they come in to drop off or pick up a phone. There are some exceptions to that rule. If I have something like, you know, husband or wife drops off a phone and says that their spouse is coming to pick it up, I will ask them to leave the name, you know, so that when they come in, we know who they are. or to leave a number where we can call them to confirm that everything's okay. But, you know, in a situation like this, what do you do? And by the way, my goal behind this is to get some exposure out there. So by all means, if you think you might recognize this person, or if you have a phone repair store in that area or any other type of store, obviously watch out for this guy. It's very difficult to tell when someone comes through your store what their intentions are. Occasionally you'll see some red flags, but in this case, I don't know what else you could do except say, you know, if someone has running shoes on, are they going to be planning on running away? I've had stuff like this happen to me before. I had a guy run out when I worked in an office store carrying a printer, still in the box, the entire printer, and there was no way I could catch this guy. And in many cases, they recommend that you don't go chasing after shoplifters, but you know, it kind of sucks, and you take it personally when it's something that you worked very hard for, and this is affecting your bottom line, especially when it is a privately owned business. And this customer, you know, or thief, basically took money out of the pocket of the person who runs that business, which really sucks, because ultimately what this will do is drive up the bottom, you know, the prices to other customers, in effect. So when people say, I saw somebody shoplifting or something like that, but, you know, that's none of my business. Well, you can choose not to be involved, obviously. The sad thing is that all of those costs that are associated with that loss do get passed on to the consumer. So if you're doing business with a company and someone steals from them, in a way, they're kind of stealing from you too, which is unfortunate, especially over something like, you know, it might have been like $100, $125 repair. And now this guy gets to have his image all over YouTube and probably all over several other places. But I would recommend that if you know who this person is, you can probably contact, again, I'll leave the link down in the bottom of the video after this is completed. If you know who this is, you can pass that information on to them. I'm not sure what his next steps will be, obviously. Hey, Harvey, how's it going? Couldn't you write this off as a loss when you're filing taxes? Absolutely. Anything that you lose from your business will be written off against your whatever it is that you make. So yes, you can write it off, which does reduce the total losses somewhat because there's less of a tax liability. But when it comes down to it, you know, you have to work much harder in order to make money because we pay taxes on our earnings. So it's very frustrating. In addition to that, you know, it's not just the value of the merchandise, and I'm not sure if this would be allowable, but there's also the time that you invested in that, you know, in that repair for the customer, in doing any paperwork that's associated with filing a police report. You know, the damage goes deeper than just the surface, you know, just the value, the dollar value that they lost there. So I don't know if it's possible to put a number on that. You know, can you say that I also spent 2 hours dealing with this theft and that was time out of my day and this is how much money I earn per hour? You know, I don't know how that works, but he can absolutely write off the cost of the device itself. And I would be curious to know if it would make any difference or not whether you record the IMEI from the device, because chances are it's going to get passed off to someone else very soon after, I would assume. But if this person actually owns that device and you know what the serial number for it is, are there any steps that you can take at that point? I really don't know, because there are some pretty serious privacy issues surrounding, you know, the release of information when a customer has an account with the telecommunications company. I don't think that you can, you know, maybe with a police report or a warrant, you know, if they had a search warrant, they could probably go to the carrier and say, you know, we have this IMEI, but really, you know, over $100 transaction, it's not going to happen. Chances are, you know, it's going to have to be a much bigger dollar amount. Now, on that same note, here's the interesting thing. And I put this down here in the ticker so I would remember it. iPhone 10 being over $950, technically, as far as I know, and I am not a lawyer, so obviously this is just my speculation, but that I believe would qualify theft of an iPhone 10 as being a felony in California, because grand theft is defined as, in most cases, the theft of property of value of $950 or more. Now, obviously, there are a few variables in there. You know, if you just bought the phone today and it's brand new versus whether you bought the phone and then you owned it for a month or two. But I would hope that people who are in the business of stealing things would think twice about stealing phones just based on this potential charge of, you know, being a felon because you steal someone's phones. And I just hate when people steal stuff, you know, for so many reasons, for the obvious. And then beyond that, it makes life complicated and it sucks for everyone else who is honest. But, you know, hopefully this will be somewhat of a deterrent, you know, in addition to the kill switch that we have aka iCloud and the factory reset protection on Android devices. You know, but it always comes down to someone trying to make a quick buck, and a lot of times they don't really care about that kind of stuff. Dean Early, I had to pay for the cost of a screen repair before my local shop would go ahead with my phone repair. Really, that's interesting. Now, you know, I would be curious about the details on that, because there are some situations where I would do the same thing, and I'll give you a very some specific examples. If I'm working with something, and I wouldn't say 100% across the board, but if I'm working with something that has a very high dollar amount associated with it, and I have to special order that item. So if you came into my store and said, hey, I've got a Galaxy S7, and I need to have the display replaced, and I don't have the particular color that your phone is, and I've got to make a special order, and I've got to take $250, $275 up front and purchase that part, then I would not have a problem with collecting a deposit from the customer to do so. So you'll kind of find that happening, I think, a lot of times when you're dealing with something of that amount of value. Now, I know the probable reason for that. Well, I don't think too many people are worried about someone walking off with their property, you know, with the repair afterwards without paying. I think it has more to do with the initial investment on some of these replacement parts, which it's very difficult for us to communicate often to customers that, you know, if you see something advertised, and a great example, and I'll probably go back to this 20 times because it happens all the time. You know, people come in with a piece of glass, literally a piece of glass, like it looks like a screen protector for a Galaxy S7 Edge, and say, hey, I bought this on Amazon for $10. Can you install it? The part that we buy to perform that replacement is not just a $10 piece of glass from Amazon. In many cases, these things are hundreds. And I'm talking, I want to say right now, if you wanted to get like an iPhone 8 replacement screen, you're probably going to be up to at least $300, $400, maybe more, $100, and it takes quite a while for the value of these replacement parts to come down. So I would suspect that maybe that's what you were dealing with. Now, if someone came into my store and had an iPhone 6 and wanted to replace the screen, that's one that we do routinely, and we've got them on the shelf, and the dollar amount associated with that is not nearly as high as, you know, basically a lot of these Android devices and very late model iPhones that come out. That's typically when we run into that situation. Otherwise, I would question why they asked you to pay up front. You know, if it was just a very routine repair, that would surprise me. You know, outside of maybe something that could be a very, very labor-intensive process, and this is one where a lot of people who are in this business kind of have different philosophies about. You know, if someone asked me for data recovery, and I say, well, you know, I can do one of two things. I can charge you by the hour, because we don't know sometimes whether or not the procedure is going to be successful. So I have to say, I'll do one of two things. I'll charge you a per hour rate in order to attempt to recover your data, or if I don't get your data back, you don't have to pay, which often sounds very good to the customers. But the catch is this: anyone who says that I will invest my time to try to do this work for you, but if I'm not successful, you don't pay, you can imagine how hard they're really going to try. Okay, so if they have money sitting on the workbench ready to be made, or this other potential money, if they are fortunate enough to be able to recover the data, but if not, it's a, you know, win or lose situation. It could be zero all the way across. They're not going to be able to invest a lot of time and resources in order to go after that in a situation like that. So in that respect, we've had a few things where we've said, you know, we need to have some payment up front, because once we start doing this, we're into it a good hour or 2 hours before we can turn back. So there may be some exceptions to that rule. Mike, do you charge full price or half before and half after the job is completed? If I'm going to charge anything up front when it comes to equipment cost, if I'm doing a very high dollar equipment cost repair, I will generally charge a deposit on the cost of the part. So if someone says, you know, I need this laptop screen installed, and that laptop screen happens to be $250, I would collect the $250 up front. Whoops, sorry about that. I just shook the whole world there. I'll collect the deposit for the part up front, and then when the repair is completed and the customer comes to pick it up, they'll generally pay the balance. If you're talking about something like the ladder, and again, guys, bear with me because there's such a lag here. Sometimes I'm not sure which topic you're referring to. But if you're talking about something where I say, hey, I have to charge you a bench fee for this repair, I'll give you an example. If someone came in and said they, you know, their phone got wet and we'll typically perform what we call a general cleaning, which is very simple. You know, you open up the phone, you look for obvious signs of moisture and corrosion in the connectors, and, you know, look far enough to tell to what degree the liquid damage might be. You know, if a little bit of water got in the charge port and there's some corrosion right on the backside of it and the rest of the phone looks clean and the stickers haven't turned red, we'll do something called a general cleaning. We'll clean the phone up and we won't charge anything right then and there generally, you know, usually unless the phone actually starts working properly again at that point. Now, if we go inside and we see that the damage has gone quite a bit further and some of the functionality on the phone, or maybe the phone doesn't power up at all, and we say, look, we are going to put aside time and energy and resources to do everything we can to get your information back or to get this phone working again, then in many cases, we will charge what we call a bench fee. So we'll say, hey, you know, for us to get into this repair, here's what we do. We'll charge, I'm going to pick a number out of the air. We'll charge $50 up front. And that covers the first hour of labor plus any parts we're using, you know, and so forth, and the time and energy that we invest in that. And then if we have to go further beyond that, you know, let's say we get the phone working, but we realize that there is a bad LCD, or we find out that the battery's dead, you know, then usually we'll contact the customer and say, look, we got the phone into working condition. However, there are some additional parts that you will require in order to be able to use it from here. So we've cleaned out all the liquid damage. Everything's working fine, but your display has water trapped inside of it. You know, if you're okay with that, you know, it could cause some problems down the line. We recommend that you replace it. And if so, here's what you pay in addition to whatever that fee was. Now, we don't stack fees on top of each other. Like, you know, okay, there's a bench fee and now you have to pay for the actual labor. Any bench fee that is paid for a repair is applied to the total at the end, whatever that may be. So I hope that answered your question. And if it didn't, let me know. All right, let's get this browser over here because I had some other stuff I want to talk about. We got thieves, scams. Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? People are just always wanting to find a way to make a buck. And if you look at some of the scams that are out there, it's like, if you spend as much time that you do putting this whole idea and this plan together to rip people off, if you just put that into something that was legitimate, you could make money, not have, you know, the police looking for you, not be stealing from people, and you could have a successful method of making money. But I guess some people just choose a different path sometimes. Okay, so this is going to be tricky. I'm going to try to, try to stack this so I can see. I need to do a little rearranging here on this video to make it work better. I was actually going to be on an interview a couple days ago, and I was going to tell everyone about it. And then the area where that interview was going to take place was in the line of fire for the most recent hurricane out of the Gulf. So hopefully everyone there is okay, and I'll hear back from them. And if that ends up happening, I'll let you know. The Pixel 2 pre-orders are now open. They will be in the stores on October 19th. What do you all think? Because a lot of people come in here and say, what do you think about this new phone? I'm curious to hear what everyone else thinks about the Pixel 2. And here's what I can tell you about it. Obviously, it is made by HTC. So to me, that causes a bit of skepticism. And I'm sorry to say so. Like, I really want every phone company to have the opportunity to succeed. And it's going to take a lot for HTC to really turn their game around. So maybe this will help. Maybe this will be the help that they need to, you know, kind of regain their customers' trust and grab some market share. But I hate to say it, I am skeptical. Now, in addition to that, the Pixel will start at $649 for the 64 gigabyte version. If you want to upgrade to the 128, it is $749. The article that I read, at least one of the articles that I read, said that was a huge jump. And I don't think that it is. I think $100 to double your storage is kind of a no-brainer, at least for me, you know, especially if you're recording video on your phones. 64 gigs, as we have seen, you know, memory requirements just continue to increase over time. So I don't think that at this point I would buy a 64 gigabyte phone. And that's just, you know, kind of thinking forward. Of course, I do hold on to my stuff for quite a while. So for a limited time, if you buy or pre-order the Pixel 2, you will get a Google Home Mini with your purchase. If you're in the US, Australia, Canada, or Germany, now that's a $49 value. If you haven't seen it already, it's kind of the competitor to the Amazon pill or whatever it is, the little thing. So it's a little voice box speaker thing. And that's what Google is trying to do, is compete with the Amazon Echo. Sorry, I had the name wrong on that. So you get one for free now if you order the Pixel. So there's half of the upgrade cost, you know, compensated for pretty much if you go with the 128 gig option. They will have no headphone jack. I don't know why. I think it's just going to happen, you know, across the board. I think that it was my opinion, obviously. I think it was kind of silly for Apple and unnecessary to get rid of the headphone jack. But as you know, anytime Apple does something, many other companies are quick to jump on that bandwagon and do the same thing. So, you know, whether you agree with it or not, it is fair to say that Apple does set trends. You know, whatever they do, they have so much market share that other companies tend to go along with everything from design to functionality to you name it. So it looks like headphone jacks probably will continue to disappear. That wouldn't surprise me at all. It doesn't bother me as a user because I've been, you know, wireless Bluetooth for ages. I just think it's kind of silly to try to say that they didn't have room to include a headphone jack. And a lot of people have good headphones out there that they're still using with a 3.5. And is it really that difficult to include? I guess so. However, it will also not have wireless charging. And for me, in this day and age, that is a deal breaker. You know, as of today, even Apple, who has resisted this whole wireless charging platform for what? I don't know, 5 or 6 years? Even Apple is putting wireless charging into their phones. Like, the time is now, it's 2017, and the Google Pixel 2 will not have wireless charging. I can't figure it out. It doesn't seem, you know, hardware-wise, it doesn't seem like it takes up a lot of room. The only thing is, you can't have metal on the back, so I would assume that's the issue. There's got to be a workaround for that, you know, or some way to put something in the center of the back, just like they did with the iPhone 8, but no wireless charging. That is a deal-breaker for me. I love wireless charging. I want wireless charging on every phone. I'm not sure everyone else feels the same, but that's it. I really dislike the squeezing. I was going to get to that in just a second. The squeezing function thing is kind of weird. Yeah, Google's going to start being in the dongle business too. I imagine that's what it is. So whatever. Anyways, the Pixel 2 will have a 5-inch display. The XL is going to have a 6-inch display. To me, that is more tablet than phone. I know we call them phablets. I tried using an iPhone 6 Plus or 7 Plus for a while, and it was just too much phone. You know, I'd like to downsize a bit from the 7, which sounds crazy because I'm the one that always complained about not being able to text people on something like an iPhone 5 because the characters are just too small. But at this point, you know, I do talk to text quite often or swipe, which is great. You know, that actually works. And I like having the extra room in my pocket personally. Now, for multimedia, I don't generally watch movies on phones. I'm sure there are lots of people that do. So for them, that would be a great option to have a larger screen. It's going to be massive, 6-inch diameter or a 6-inch diagonal on that thing. 2700 milliamp hour battery life. So the Pixel 2 should last you all day. Now, I'm sure if you just had the phone turned on nonstop and played videos, that wouldn't be the case. But under normal circumstances, you're supposed to be able to get through an entire day on a single charge. And to me, that is at the top of my list. That is a definite plus. You know, to have a phone that you just charge one time, I think I would be willing to sacrifice many, many other features, including dual cameras on the back of the phone and all sorts of other goofy stuff, just to have a phone that makes it through the day. I think that's where we might want to concentrate our research and development. Just my opinion, of course. It says also that you can get 7 hours out of a 15-minute charge. So that's really cool to be able to rapid charge your phone, 15 minutes and you've got 7 hours. I imagine they're talking about standby time and not actual usage. But still, to be able to charge that quick is pretty cool. Maybe they are talking about usage. I don't know the details. We'll see when it comes out. We'll be running stock Android 8.0 Oreo out of the box. Touch to squeeze to launch the Google Assistant. Yeah, that's kind of bizarre. I agree. I'm not, like, I haven't tried it, so I don't know, but it seems weird. The idea behind it is that when you have a squeeze sensor, you cannot actually accidentally press your button for your Google Assistant, which is one of the things that I do experience once in a while, especially with an iPhone, is that if I say Sirius, I'm just checking. A lot of times when I say Sirius, Siri will turn on and ask me to talk. And to me, that is really strange and cause for concern. I don't want my phone to turn on and start recording my conversation unless I clearly select that feature, because that could get pretty weird, as you can imagine. In fact, it was pretty funny because more than once in a noisy environment, my phone has kicked on and started recording my dialogue, and the whole conversation is there in the phone. So, you know, obviously it's a stretch to think that that would be sent via text message or email, but it's still kind of weird to have your phone listening in and recording your conversation that way without you intending for it to do so. So, Yeah, I don't know about the squeeze thing either. It seems kind of weird. I will definitely go to the store. I don't think I'll be buying the Google Pixel, but it'd be cool to see how that function works. Let's see what else. Fastest fingerprint scanner of any phone ever, if that excites you. I personally don't use Touch ID. I assume that maybe some people out there who do use the Touch IC are finding that it takes a long Touch ID or Touch IC. It's the Touch ID IC that we're referring to. In any case, I imagine there are people that are out there using Touch ID and getting impatient. Maybe it takes a long time on their phones. I thought that was relatively fast. But in any case, the Pixel 2 is supposed to have the fastest fingerprint scanner ever known to man until the next phone comes out, probably. It will have dual front-facing speakers, so you won't have this edge-to-edge display like we do on the Galaxies and on the newer iPhones. You will actually have two speakers on both sides, probably about right here and right over here. So that'll be interesting if you enjoy stereo sound on your phone. That's a definite plus. I do get tired of cupping my hand over the back of my speaker so that I can hear my phone, you know, because you can have to redirect the sound to come back towards you when your loudspeaker's on the bottom. So I'd definitely be willing to sacrifice the extra screen real estate in order to have the front-facing speakers, as long as they don't have a home button there, because that just takes up too much space, in my opinion, for something I don't generally use very much. IP67, so very high on the water and dust resistant scale, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, because we will be seeing a lot of people bringing in phones because they decided to take them swimming. So, unfortunate for the customers, probably good for people who are in the liquid damage recovery business. There are limits to how far and how long you can put your phone underwater and under what circumstances. And really, the biggest downside there is that when you make a water-resistant phone, in most cases, once the water gets inside, not only is your warranty voided because the phone is wet on the inside despite being water resistant, but it's very difficult for that water to come out of the phone on its own, so it will typically sit there and cause corrosion, which is something I want to get to a little bit later. I actually have some interesting stuff. Hi, Gustavo. I have some things related to that, but I don't want to jump around too much today. So let's finish up with the specs. It will be available in just black, clearly white, and kinda blue. I don't know who comes up with these names, but okay. Snapdragon 835 chipset and 4 gigabytes of RAM. This will be a very fast phone. Should be able to handle anything that you throw at it right now until the next software upgrade. We'll see. You know how that goes. 8 megapixel front-facing camera, 12 megapixel rear-facing camera with 98 DXO mark, and if you're wondering what that means, don't feel bad. I never heard of this before, but the DXO mark rating is the amount of information captured by the lens of a given camera and how well the lens and camera perform together. So basically, they take a look at cameras and determine how well they function with their lenses in addition to how much information they're actually collecting when you take a photograph. This is higher than the Pixel. The original Pixel was actually an 89. The Pixel 2 is rating at a 98. That is almost as good as it gets from my end, if I understand this correctly. So the camera's gonna be pretty awesome on this thing on the backside. Not only that, it will have the portrait option where you can kind of take a photograph of something and it will focus on the thing that you're photographing, and then everything in the background will kind of be blurry the way that they're doing with the new iPhones. However, they don't require two separate cameras to do that, which is gonna be interesting. And I understand that kind of gives you an effect of, you know, more of a pop to whatever it is that you happen to be photographing. And if you ever watch a movie, you'll kind of see where they want you to look on screen based on what's in focus and what's not. And at the same time, that's always been one thing that kind of bugged me. You know, when I'm watching a landscape scene and they want to focus on a certain person, I want to look at the landscape. You can't really do that because it's out of focus. But that is how photography works, apparently. I'm definitely not an expert on that. But I do remember a lot of times as a kid watching a movie and just being really frustrated and wondering why certain areas are out of focus when I'm trying to look at that. Well, apparently that's not where they want you looking. It does feature optical and electronic image stabilization for video recording and photos. So that'll be cool. You know, shaky hands can still take pictures. I think most phones should probably have that by now. Listen to this, and this is interesting. Unlimited photo and video cloud storage at full resolution, okay? So unlimited, all the video and all the pictures that you wanna take, you can store on the cloud indefinitely at full resolution until 2021. And by that I mean that they will allow you to record and upload that at an unlimited amount of space until 2021. And at that point, they will still retain everything that you've uploaded, but you will then be able to, you'll be limited to 16 megapixel photos and 1080 videos. But everything that you've uploaded prior to that will apparently be stored at its full resolution indefinitely, which is kind of interesting and curious that, you know, as to why they're wanting to do that. It's kind of weird. But anyways, if you want to take a lot of photos and get a lot of free photo or video storage, then buying a Pixel 2, or a Pickle 2, however you want to call it, a Pixel 2 may be the way to go. Now, there was one other thing that I wanted to show you here. I thought this was interesting. I do want to pull it up in the browser because it was kind of cool, kind of funny, and really, I think, a bit of a... Why do I keep going back to that? Mike, stop it. It is... Let's see. Where do we want to be here? Okay, let's go back to here. Okay, so this article I thought was interesting. You know, we've been having hurricanes all over the place lately. Well, there is a store that is offering no rice. Can I make this thing smaller so you can see the whole thing? Let's do that. I am such an amateur at this. Let's see if we can get this whole thing on the screen. I really try to set this up ahead of time. And at the same time, I don't want to infringe on anyone's copyright information. So this is from the Ledger. Long story short, no rice needed. There's a local store that is offering free cell phone drying. Okay, what does that mean? I think we've had this conversation before. So these guys have a machine called the Redux. And what they do is if you have a wet phone, you throw it into this machine and it is going to recover your phone and get all of the moisture out of the inside. And like magic, your phone will be working again. And they're not charging anything for hurricane victims, which is a nice gesture, obviously, for them to offer the service. This is from TCC. It's the nation's largest Verizon retail and Redux, the company that featured the drying machine. I don't know if these are the same guys, but there was someone recently who went on Shark Tank and actually sold them on this whole idea of putting a phone in a machine to dry it out. And for those of us who are in the business, we just kind of sighed and said, okay, here's why that will not work. Now, I'm not saying it's not better than nothing. If you had the choice of, okay, let's just get rid of this so I don't do that again. Okay, done. Okay, countdown is gone. So it's good to do something, obviously, if your phone is wet. And I don't want to make this all about rice is not the answer, but rice is not the answer. But I won't have that argument with anyone because urban legends persist. But long story short, if you have the choice of doing nothing to your wet phone and putting it in a machine that's supposed to vacuum out all the moisture, then by all means, throw your phone into this machine and hope that it does you some good. But bear in mind that rice, magical machines that you press a button and they fix your phone when they're wet, are going to do one thing, and that's generally instill a false sense of confidence with the customer who happens to get lucky and have their phone work after whatever procedure that they chose or what, you know, whatever action they chose to take after it got wet. Because a lot of times phones will come back to life for a short period of time before the corrosion gets to the stage where it renders them completely useless and the damage is actually worse than it would have been had they cleaned them properly in the beginning. And I want to show you an example here real quick. There's a similar device in public restrooms. It's called a hand dryer. Yeah, exactly. Now check this out. Recently, Beha, I hope you're still there because I want you to see this. I had a tablet that I was working on, and I doubt that the customer had any idea whatsoever that their tablet had got moisture inside of it. So it went in through the charge port, which is a very good place for, you know, anything foreign to get into your phone. If you take a look at my How to Clean Your iPhone 6 Charge Port video, lightning ports are notorious for this. They suck lint up in there like a magnet. Anything that you have laying on your countertop, a lot of times the charging port will be very close to the surface. And if you've got something clear like water that you can't see, it will suck right up into the device. And what happens at that point is that corrosion starts to take place. Now, if you've seen a micro USB charge port before, on the inside of a phone, there are several little legs that come off of that port and they set right down on the logic board. And those legs are used to conduct electricity and information between the charge port and the cable that you have plugged into it. So whether you're plugged into a computer and you're transferring files, or you're plugged into a charger and you're charging the phone or the device, you have to have good communication across those pins. I came across one that was so corroded, I actually thought that one of the pins was gone. And here is why rice And any vacuum type of drying machine in this situation would not have done any good. I want to show you this real quick. Okay, so this is a micro USB charge port, and as I was removing it from the logic board, you can see that we've just got a big black mess of gunk. Obviously the charge port looks pretty bad, but that leg there that's right in the center, it is corroded so bad that despite repeated attempts to reflow that joint, it just could not communicate. You can see the port itself has a black leg there in the center, and then on the logic board there's a big black mark, and that thing is just charred. And I went in here physically and had to try to pry this corrosion off. Like I said, initially I thought this whole pad on the logic board was just destroyed, but it was actually covered by corrosion that would not clean up no matter what. I mean, I was in here scrubbing this thing with a horsehair brush, rubbing alcohol, solvent, reflowing it with solder and with flux, and the corrosion just would not come off no matter what I did. So after just going over this thing over and over and over and scraping this stuff off, it took me a while to do it, but eventually I was able to clean up this pad. So when you take a look at something like this and you wonder why people think that putting your phone in a bag of rice is somehow going to remove this corrosion, where you have to physically go in and access the areas where this rust, basically, which is what it is, has started taking place and is advanced to the stage where there is literally a complete blockage between the communication pin and that pad that's on the logic board. This is why people who are technicians, when they hear this stuff about putting your phone in a bag of rice, they just kind of laugh. And then anyone who has done that before, you know, they've actually put their phone in a bag of rice and it started working afterwards, and that, you know, automatically that means that rice will heal wet phones. Keep in mind, this is right near the edge, you know, right near the entry port of the phone. Had the moisture gone in further deeper inside the phone, obviously there's even less of a chance that anything that you do from the outside is going to remedy that situation. So I won't torture you and make you watch this entire video, but over time you can see that pad is actually still there. In fact, once the corrosion was removed, it is healthy enough that we can install a new charge port and the device starts working properly again. But if you think that a bag of rice or a machine that you can put your phone in and press a button is gonna clean this stuff off, you'll be in for a big surprise. And the biggest negative to that is the false confidence that people have that, okay, now my phone's working again. Meanwhile, what you saw inside of this device is actually taking place over a period of time. So they don't take steps to prevent it from getting worse. And it may get to the point where the phone or the tablet completely stops working and there's nothing that can be done to fix it without losing the information that's stored on it, which tends to be the most important part. So I think that this thing was kind of a publicity deal. You know, hey, look, we're helping hurricane victims by letting them dry their phones out for free. It's definitely better than nothing, so I can't fault them for doing something. But I'm always very skeptical about this kind of stuff because what it tends to lead to is problems with the device later down the line. So, you know, if it works for you, great. If you're buying a new phone next week and you don't care, that's one thing. But with the amount of money that people invest in their devices, many times we want a permanent solution. You know, we want to go in there and actually address the real problem and fix it so it doesn't advance to the stage where, you know, it just stops working all of a sudden. In any case, storage space isn't an issue for Google. Every second of the day, another 24 hours of it. Yeah, it's insane. And in fact, it's interesting that you said that, Dean. I was going to kind of briefly talk about Google and YouTube specifically, and I will come back to that a little bit later on. But yes, they definitely are just increasing the amounts of in storage space and data. In fact, I've got a thing right now on Amazon. And again, I'm not endorsing them, but I've got a membership with Amazon where I think it's like $60 a year and it's unlimited storage, I believe. Which I haven't even used, and it keeps rebilling me, so I need to get on that. But my intention was with multimedia, because it takes up so much space, where are you going to put all this stuff? You know, where are you going to put all of your videos that you recorded on your phone? You can put them on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, but I think it's good to have something to fall back on. You know, should you lose your device that has the information stored on it, or you run out of room and you record over, you know, you basically delete that information and you have it on one other stored in one other place, it's definitely a good idea to have something to fall back on just in case. You know, we really never know what's going to happen. Data online doesn't get corrupted all the time, but, you know, anything can happen. So if it's important to you, I encourage people always to have multiple backups, physical and digital backups if possible. You know, if I've got something that's important to me I'll have it on an external hard drive. I'll probably have it on the disk on my computer itself, and I'll also have it on a remote cloud somewhere else. And that comes with the assumption that that information is being stored by a third party, so they ultimately would have access to that information if they wanted it. So just something to think about. I'm not too worried about it, but if you are, you know, if you have sensitive information, you know, where someone could get into your bank account or something else like that, you probably want to be very careful about where you store that at. All right, so this week, this is going to sound funny. This is probably the most unusual review I've ever done. And, well, you'll see it hopefully in a couple days if you're a subscriber. Someone sent me something to review, and this will happen on occasion. You know, they say, hey, you have a YouTube channel. Can you look at our whatever it is? And a lot of times I'll say no, because this is a phone and phone repair channel. If it doesn't have to do with phones or tablets or computers or at least something along those lines, it doesn't make sense for me to review Halloween costumes, you know? Yeah, seriously. Someone wanted to send me some Halloween costumes, and I'm not doing it. But maybe some other time on some other channel. But I got this in the mail. See if you can see it. I can't see because it's so big it takes up the whole screen. There we go. So this is the Kitchen Boss vacuum sealer. Now, why would I be reviewing this thing? And it's actually sitting over on my bench right now. Why would I want to review that? Well, here's the short answer, and you'll see the finished product later on. I sealed an iPad. So this is an iPad Air that I had replaced the screen on. And if you've probably already heard about this. I've never actually done it, but I've been told that one good way to keep this adhesive stuck onto the frame is to use a vacuum sealer that people use in their kitchen. So I said, you know what? Why don't you send me this thing? I will check it out and see how it performs. So what I'm going to do is I redid all the adhesive, and I'm going to kind of make another tutorial for anyone who's having trouble getting their screen to stay on their device, because that tends to be an issue a lot of times, especially with tablets. You know, the screens will start lifting over time. And I think this might be a viable solution to putting clamps and weights and other stuff on here. You know, obviously the main thing is make sure you have a clean surface and you're using good adhesive. But beyond that, what if a customer comes in and says, hey, I want my iPad repaired and I need to pick it up in an hour? Well, that's, you know, kind of asking a lot. Not so much because we can't perform the repair in that amount of time, but more importantly, we really want to give that adhesive a chance to seal. So when I deal with people through the mail, my thought is that, you know, it's always, hey, can you mail it out as soon as it's done? And yeah, I'll mail it out the same day. But the thing is, I don't really get the opportunity to clamp that thing down properly to make sure that the adhesive will cure. I may start shipping repaired devices out like this. You know, anything that requires some pretty heavy duty adhesive, this might not be a bad way to do it. You know, and when the customer gets it, there's a little pull tab down here. You tear it off, pop your device out, it's vacuum sealed. I'll see how that turns out. That is planned for a little bit later on this week. And on that note, I did want to put this out to everyone, to my subscribers, to everyone who's in the chat, and anyone else who is interested. I want to hear from you all as far as what you find most helpful, or things that you would prefer to see. And I'm doing that for a reason. You know, I have my analytics. I can go on, look at my channel and see what ranks high and what more people are watching. And that means something to me, but in the grand scheme of things, it means what other people generally who are visiting my channel prefer. And I'm more interested to hear from people who are subscribers, if that makes any sense. So yes, I have access to the analytics. I know which videos get the most views, but what I really want to know, you know, beyond just the bare views and the likes or dislikes, you know, from you who are subscribers, what do you find most interesting? You know, is it the tutorials? Is it the reviews? Is it, would newer products be preferable and so forth? I'm always open to suggestions. I have a feeling that doing reviews of actual devices is probably going to be the next thing. I want to have a weekly format where we do the live stream Monday. We feature a product once a week. We do a tutorial once a week, and then just kind of have a regular schedule, because for whatever reason, Google tends to like that. They want to see the same thing consistently. So they're not forcing me to do anything, but they're making it in my best interest to have an established format where I do certain things at certain times on a regular basis. So that's what I'm going to do for now and see how it works out. And the most important thing to me is whether or not it works for you guys, for those of you who watch this channel. You know, is this what you want to see? The last thing I want to do is just start making videos for the sake of making videos. You know, I try to have a purpose behind each one of these, and I'm going to stick to that as much as possible. On that same topic, I unfortunately will have to stay away from most politics, and this is another thing that I kind of wanted to do actually on a second channel that I was going to start, and that was to have a little more opinion-based materials, you know, where I could talk about things outside of phone repair. And ironically, just about the time I started, you know, moving on that concept was when Google and YouTube started getting really funny about what they allow you to publish, what they rank, and what they allow you to monetize. And I just want to take a second to talk about that. I know we're coming up on 3 o'clock already. I don't want to keep you here all day. But if you're not already aware of it, YouTube is a little unusual in that they basically allow you to store stuff for free. As Dean mentioned earlier, you know, you have an unlimited amount of space with YouTube where you can upload videos all day and night, and there's never a, hey, that's too much, you've used up your space. Well, the trade-off is that you've got to play by their rules, and that's understandable, and Google will tend, or I should say Alphabet, I should say YouTube, you know, more specifically, YouTube will tend to err on the conservative side of them not getting in trouble. And that is also understandable. You know, if there's something questionable when it comes to copyrights, when it comes to politics, when it comes to subject matter, when it comes to anything, you know, there are a number of categories where YouTube says we can't really keep track of who's doing what, but we want to make sure that nobody sues us and that we're not breaking any laws. And I understand that completely. That is not a problem. There does seem to be a big difference, however, between certain channels where, you know, if you have X amount of subscribers, it seems like you can say and do anything you want and you'll still have advertisers. Whereas if you're a smaller channel, you can easily get delisted or demonetized because you talk about a number of controversial topics, which is unfortunate because, you know, despite what I think they're trying to do, which is protect themselves, is they are limiting the information that can be exchanged on a free platform, you know, where I could come up here and say, hey, this is what I think about this. I can't do that. You know, I can't talk about a lot of things that I would like to, because just having those keywords or just having those titles in your video can, you know, just have Google blanket say, okay, we're not going to monetize this video. We're not going to rank it. We're not going to suggest it in the search results because you mentioned these certain words, which is really bizarre to me, you know, because Google is an American company, and for the most part, we want to believe that companies that operate in this country will have the same philosophy as far as free speech goes to a certain extent, or we assume that. We want to assume that, and that's not 100% true. And in effect, you know, a result of what they are doing is leading to something very close, you know, very similar to censorship, because when they say, you know, we just don't want you to talk about these certain things, but other people can, then that means you can speak, but you can't. And it's just really weird. And it's unfortunate because, as I mentioned, there was a second channel that I was just about to launch, and I'm really having second thoughts about ever doing that until something changes here. So bear with me on that. I hope it changes. I actually have a gnat flying around in here. It must have escaped from Napa. All right. Harvey, that iPad is now IPH certified. You know what? I really should do a water damage test on that thing. Throw it in a tub and see if that vacuum sealer works. I got to tell you, the thing's amazing. Again, totally off topic, but I got this thing and I started sealing up some food and I started reading the instructions on it. And it's crazy. You can take produce, which I always have a problem with. You seal it up and instead of lasting for 3 days, it'll last like 2 weeks, which is amazing. And I'm actually testing it right now. I sealed up a bunch of stuff. So if you buy large quantities, like I said, I'm not into a lot of kitchen gadgets, but when they sent me this, I started looking into it and it's pretty cool. You know, you can freeze things, put them in the freezer and they're good for a year where there would normally only be months. So it's kind of cool. I'll try to come up with some more creative ideas as to what to do with that vacuum sealer. I primarily watch your channels for your non-destructive teardowns. Okay, cool. And I plan to continue doing that for as long as that is feasible. That has been my focus on here for a long time. It's kind of what I enjoy doing. So as long as my eyes hold out, I'll keep doing it. And hopefully on some more late model devices, I'd like to, there's a whole lot of stuff out there I'd like to take apart and make tutorials for the moment I have time for it. Thanks everyone for joining. It is almost 3 o'clock. I will, of course, leave the chat open for about the next 5 minutes or so, because by the time you see this, it will be 5 minutes into the future or the past or however that works, because we have a bit of a lag here. I will keep the chat open in case anyone has any questions or comments, suggestions for upcoming live streams. Again, thanks everyone for coming out. I really appreciate it. I'll be doing this on an ongoing basis. I've actually adjusted my training schedule so that I can be here every Monday at 2 p.m. Although I may do a few things outside of that because I have a lot of people writing in saying, hey, can you do a live stream some other time? Because I can't do Monday 2 p.m. Pacific Standard, and I understand that. So I will stick to this live stream and possibly add on some different times of the day with some different topics, which will be fun. I love the live streams. Hey, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoy it. I love doing these. This is like the high point of my Monday. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to try to find something to put on the screen. There we go. Let's actually do the fake Apple purchase. And again, I'll be here until at least 3:05. Outside of that, I will catch you next week. Thanks for coming by.